Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Natalie Gallimore, who'll be telling us a little bit about dyslexia. So tell me a little bit about your work concerning dyslexia.
Well, I am firstly a parent of two children with dyslexia, and everything that I have learned has been outside of what my work career was. It was all to do with helping my own children when I felt that the educational services provided by the local board weren't sufficient to meet their needs. So, currently, I have become involved with a group called Decoding Dyslexia Ontario. It is the Ontario chapter of a U.S.-based grassroots movement whereby parents of children with learning struggles in reading have got together and are trying to get the science of reading written into educational policy across the United States, and we're trying to do the same now for Ontario. The developments in the science have really improved over the past 30 years, and the educational policy has not kept pace. So the services being provided within the schools are certainly not best practices based on the global scientific evidence.
So in terms of the challenges a person with dyslexia faces, what are some of the common day-to-day struggles?
Well, normally it's identified in childhood. And I would say that most children with dyslexia would know that they're not keeping up with peers by grade one. They cannot read individual words. When the teacher says, go pick a reader to read in class, they don't know what to pick because even the simplest of readers in the class may be too challenging for them. And by grades two or three, they are really struggling to read. And since reading is the foundational skill, which all education is built on, they quickly fall behind in other subjects. If their dyslexia doesn't extend to math, like reversing math numbers, they may be able to keep pace in mathematics, but some dyslexics do have coexisting problems in math, and even math is not a salvation for them.
So, in terms of your work with this decoding dyslexia, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, there's not been a real success moment, but we were very happy when the new government did open the consultation on the curriculum, because even though it wasn't mentioned, we were able to write in with our parental concerns about the reading curriculum in Ontario, that the curriculum that was developed in the early 2000s has not kept track with the science. What is known is that what's called the whole language method of teaching reading, or three Qs, where you use semantics and picture clues to come up with a text, that does not work for children with dyslexia. And because dyslexia is so prevalent, there's estimates anywhere between 10 to 20% of the population. So in Ontario, in a given year, that would be about 200,000 students have some degree of dyslexia, mild through to severe. Those kids cannot have a hope of learning to read in a normal classroom environment. And in every single classroom in Ontario, there's going to be minimally one child, if not 3 to 4 children, with some degree of dyslexia.
So, with the policy changes, what would you most like to see done or added?
Well, the first thing would be is to make the reading curriculum accessible. You can't have inclusive classrooms. You can't say everybody can be taught in this classroom if the curriculum isn't designed to reach them. And what we know from the research is that if a curriculum can reach a dyslexic child, somebody that has a genetic predisposition to really have reading struggles, that same technique can reach kids that are on the ASD spectrum, that have ADHD. It is the best practice to try to teach reading to reach all the struggling readers in the classroom. So that would be the first goal. What's been successful in the United States is early screening. There's ways to look at the child's brain as early as kindergarten and just look at letter sound recognition and how they can quickly name common objects, and as well as family history, since it's a large genetic component. And if this screening is done in kindergarten, teachers can closely monitor those children for reading struggles, like more closely than they would monitor maybe other kids. But as soon as those kids hit a roadblock in reading, they should be intervened with. The research indicates as well that if you intervene before the end of grade one, the large learning gap in other subject matter doesn't develop. The kids don't fall further behind. And in fact, if it's addressed promptly, they may never have to enter the special education system and get an IEP because it's addressed in the classroom with quick intervention.
So if you could send any one message to the community and to our leaders about why this is a priority, what would you say?
Well, I would say it's a priority because reading is a foundational skill. 100 years ago, not everyone had to read. If you struggled in reading, you could drop out of school in grade 6 or 7 when it became an impossibility to continue, and you could get a good job in construction or in labor in a manufacturing plant. But now, as for any job, even driving, say, a vehicle for a city municipality, high school graduation is a necessary qualification. Dropping out because you can't read is no longer an option. And in fact, even for what we would consider sort of straightforward jobs in an office environment, post-secondary qualifications are required, be it college or university. And if you can't get through high school, if your pathway is restricted to taking technical subjects, one, you don't have a choice of where you're going to go, and two, your job opportunities will be restricted. And we know so much more about dyslexia over the past 30 or 40 years. We know more. We should be doing better. And you have to consider these kids and their opportunities for the future. Statistics Canada shows the high rate of coexisting mental health concerns with kids that have learning disabilities. And this is partially because of the frustration that they experience going through the educational system. It's not geared to them. They feel rejected by this institution that we've created, and the mental health concerns develop. If we adjusted at the younger grades, again, the mental health concerns would never happen. We'd be eliminating that, and there's a lot of talk about mental health. So where is it for these kids? And we know how to eliminate some of it, so why don't we work on actioning it?
So when you mention frustration, if that's over a long period of time, it can lead to all-out depression for these kids and have a whole host of other issues, such as suicidal tendencies.
Oh, yes. So there's a University of Toronto professor that did find a correlation between suicide attempts and learning disabilities, and it's higher than the average for Canada. So, again, that link is known, that there is higher suicide. Also known is from Statistics Canada data that people with learning disabilities in adulthood have higher mental health concerns. And some of the mental health that develops secondary to the learning disability is so impairing that they cannot keep down employment. Their employment opportunities due to the mental health limits their ability to earn money and have a solid living. As well, there's the question of substance abuse. And that data, I haven't seen it quite as much, but one could assume that a lot of people with substance abuse issues may have had very poor learning experiences through the public education system, meaning that they possibly dropped out or experienced frustration and did not see their educational requirements well served.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Next up, we're going to hear a little bit about the latest happenings with the AODA from our friend David Lipofsky. So tell me a little bit about what's been happening with the AODA.
Well, let me talk about two fronts, the provincial front and the federal front. On the provincial front, basically we've seen nothing happening. We've got no word from the provincial government of Doug Ford that they're going to unfreeze the work of the Education Standards Development Committees. I sit on the K-12 Education Standards Development Committee. Our work's been frozen since late June, since the provincial election. The provincial government had said for months that they were waiting to brief the minister. Well, the minister has been briefed. They've then said they were waiting to receive the final report of the David Onley AODA independent review. They received that report at the end of January. So the excuses for the freeze have all evaporated, and yet there's no change. There is no work being done by us to develop recommendations on an education standards education accessibility standard to tear down the barriers that continue to impede hundreds of thousands of students with disabilities in Ontario schools, colleges and universities. Similarly, the work of the Healthcare Standards Development Committee remains frozen. So there is no work going on, as is required under the Act, to develop recommendations for a healthcare accessibility standard to tear down the many barriers facing patients with disabilities in Ontario's healthcare system. This is especially troubling since in this past week the provincial government has made some sort of announcement about reforms to the healthcare system, and yet they're talking about going ahead with this without ensuring that it's a barrier-free healthcare system. And we know from 20 years ago when the previous Mike Harris conservative government did restructuring the healthcare system without regard to and consideration for accessibility barriers, that it actually made things worse for patients with disabilities in some ways.
So
that's the provincial front. And on the federal front, proposed Accessible Canada Act, Bill C-81, is now before the Senate, and it's expected, and a number of disability groups have called for public hearings. We understand they will be public hearings on that bill, and we, for the AODA Alliance, we're going to be asking to appear before those hearings, or reaching out to the Senate to that end, and our aim is to get Bill C-81 strengthened. Right now, the bill that the House of Commons passed is full of good intentions, but full of very weak provisions. In effect, it says its goal is a barrier-free Canada for people with disabilities, and that's great. But the bill, as written, does not require a single barrier facing people with disabilities to ever be removed or prevented. Which is very weak, and we need better.
So we
at the end of January or early February, made public our strategy. We anticipate a number of other disability organizations are going to be asking the federal government, the Senate, to amend the bill to incorporate 9 categories of amendments that have been endorsed in an open letter last fall to the House of Commons by around 95 disability organizations. They were endorsed last fall when the bill was before the House of Commons, and we will be saying that should be the agenda for reform, and we expect there'll be others saying similar things. Our aim is to get the Senate to make the amendments, get the bill back to the House of Commons for approval of those amendments before the federal election. Now, there is a chance this bill is not going to get through the Senate and all of these parliamentary proceedings before the fall election, just because time is short. And if that happens, we'll be asking the federal parties to commit in the election that they will bring back the bill, and indeed will strengthen the bill in accordance with the open letter that was sent to the House of Commons by 95 disability organizations last October.
So if the bill does not go through, are there any remedies available for those affected?
Well, the Canada Human Rights Act and the Charter of Rights both include protections against discrimination facing people with disabilities of varying degrees, but they both require individuals to file individual human rights complaints or individual charter claims. We've had those rights since 1982, and we will retain those rights. We need Bill C-81 to make those rights become a reality without us having to litigate one barrier at a time. The good news is that Bill C-81 was supposed to do that. The bad news is it doesn't ensure that that happens.
So,
it gives the federal government a bunch of powers to take action, but no duty to take action, except with one tiny little exception that purely procedural.
So if you could see anything added to what's been granted these powers, what would it be?
Well, among the core things that the open letter seeks is we want the bill to set a deadline by when Canada is to become fully accessible, like the Ontario law does, like the AODA does. We want it to turn the word may into the word shall in the federal act, where it says the federal government may do this or that, or the accessibility commissioners are going to create may or do this or that, that they shall, that they have to do these things, and set deadlines, benchmarks for implementation action. We also, among other things, want them to concentrate all the powers to make accessibility standards regulations in one body, federal cabinet, rather than splintering it over three, and the enforcement of the act in one body, the proposed new accessibility commissioner, rather than splintering it over four different federal organizations. The splintering of this legislation's implementation and enforcement substantially weakens it, makes it much harder for us to use, and is a gift to any obligated organization that doesn't really want to do much and doesn't want to be required to do much. And the third of the, I'm just mentioning three of the areas where we need reforms, but the open letter covers more. The third is we want mandatory accessibility strings to be attached whenever the federal government spends our money. If they buy things, they should be accessible. If they contribute to infrastructure, it should be accessible. If they give grants or loans to business to develop business markets and so on, those businesses should have to make accessibility commitments. Federal money should never be used to create or perpetuate barriers against people with disabilities. So those are three of the among the common sense things we're asking.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, and the only thing I'd add is if people want to learn more about this, there are two things I'd suggest. You want to read more on it, go to www.aodaalliance.org/Canada. That's www.aodaalliance.org/Canada. If you want to find out more on Twitter, follow at @AODAAlliance. At AODA Alliance. And if you want to get our email updates, because we send out regular email updates, write us at AODAfeedback@gmail.com and just say, sign me up. Again, it's AODAfeedback@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
From March 1st to 31st, Canada will celebrate the Rendezvous de la Francophonie, RVF. At that time of the year, get to know your Francophone neighbors. Francophone communities are present in every province and territory. RVF gives us the opportunity to get to know one another through celebration, exhibition, theater, and community activities. Linguistic duality is not only an important Canadian characteristic, it is fundamental and necessary for our continued vivre ensemble, our living together. The very existence of our country relies on this powerful tool, the continued presence of Francophone and Anglophone communities across the entire country. In this year, where we will commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Official Languages Act, let's focus on our desire to pursue and strengthen this very unique relationship between our linguistic communities.
Visit rvf.ca for more information.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Natalie Gallimore about dyslexia and got an update on the AODA Alliance from David Lepofsky. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Shan Abbasi from MBC. So can you tell me a little bit about MBC?
Yeah, we're called Volunteer MBC, and that MBC stands for Mississauga Brampton Caledon, so we're the Volunteer Center for the Region of Peel. Our mission is to promote meaningful volunteerism and foster best practices through learning and development, which just means that we have basically two approaches. One approach is frontline service of connecting people to volunteer opportunities. So we try to inspire the community to get involved with volunteering, to volunteer more if they're already volunteering, and to make it a more meaningful experience for them by supporting them in finding things that match their interests and passions. And then, on the other end of it, we work with the organizations in a backbone support. So we work with nonprofit organizations that deliver services in our region to ensure that they know how to engage volunteers, to make sure that they're having success in their volunteer recruitment, in their volunteer retention, and in their recognition of volunteers. So we provide them training through a learning center. And that training includes online training, in-person workshops, and it's geared toward people who are leaders of volunteers, people who are coordinating and managing volunteers, as well as board directors who themselves are volunteers.
So for a person with a disability who might come to you and want to get involved in the community, be a part of some work that's going on, would you be able to gear something to someone, for example, who had mental health issues?
Yeah. So what we do is we provide one-to-one consultations with people who are interested in volunteering. Although many people come to us directly through our website, and they can conduct like a self-search through our database and so forth, but we do offer these assisted searches where we help people find opportunities that are going to meet their needs, whatever their needs may be. And so if a person with a disability were to come to us, we would first do a little bit of intake, get to know why it is that they want to volunteer, what is it that they're looking for, what's their availability like, some sort of other general questions related to that. And then from there, we would sort of prepare as a team. We kind of go away and look at some opportunities to send them recommendations so that we can refer them to organizations which they can easily apply through our referral service. So it makes the application process much simpler. But what we do in the sort of in between, before that step, we'll work with our community service organizations to ensure that they're aware of how their position maybe could be tailored a little bit better to provide required accommodation. And that's something that we try to do for every person. And everyone will have certain types of needs. Of course, persons with disabilities are facing these additional barriers in the community. And so we're now trying to make a more concerted effort to work with our organizations to open up and make volunteer opportunities more accessible.
So in terms of these accessible opportunities, has there been any success moment so far that stands out for you?
That's a good question. Our referral team refers many volunteers and sends a great number of recommendations. Our community organizations have spoken to us about success stories where they've engaged volunteers, people with disabilities, and have been able to do many things. We also have opportunities in our system that are virtual. Some people with disabilities are volunteering from home. In order to support an organization, maybe it's doing something, renewing their website or something technological, or maybe it's something else that they've been able to do from home. We have many volunteers. We engage the volunteer center. We also engage many volunteers in-house so that we can actually strengthen the volunteer center with volunteers support. And we've had many volunteers with disabilities over the years come through our doors, and we've always made a great effort to support them in finding something that's right for them. One moment that comes to mind, I've had a volunteer who, when I conducted the interview by phone as part of our screening process, she had all the requisite skills and so forth. And then when she came through our door, discovered that yes, there were certain accommodations that she would require in terms of the accessibility of a wheelchair access and so forth. So that was eye-opening for me as an able person to be aware that people with disabilities are very much present in our community, interested in getting involved, and they see opportunities. And in that case, our volunteer, she turned out to be instrumental in our high school youth volunteering campaign, engaged many youth and in supporting us with some of our communication. But it was really just that opportunity needs to be there. And often, I think it's the messaging that sends the idea across that perhaps volunteering it may not be accessible and the way the role descriptions are designed, the language may seem to make the role seem rigid, and that's where we need to do a lot of work is both engaging, reaching out to the community, and making sure that people with disabilities are hearing about their volunteer center as a resource to connect them, but also so that our organizations are being mindful when they're designing roles that the space is both physically accessible, but also in terms of their attitudes, approaches, that they create a more inclusive setting. So that's what we're working on, but it's definitely something that hasn't previously been given much attention. The link between volunteering and people. Most of the content that we see actually is when we think about volunteering people with disabilities, even when people are searching online, they'll find the people with disabilities always in sort of the accessing services role, the role of the client or the role of the person requiring assistance. They don't see themselves in the role of being able to help others because of the way that messaging has been presented out there. So it's important that in all of our marketing, our positioning as what we do, that we make sure that representation isn't done that way.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Volunteering, always a great thing, my friends, especially for those in the disability community who might think to themselves, no employer's going to want to take me on because I have this need or that need. But the fact is, beyond reasonable accommodations, what it comes down to is, can a person, any person, fulfill a role in society that needs filling? The answer is yes. And such a person has something to contribute. The truth is, virtual training, as was described in Shan's interview, would have the advantage for someone with a mobility and a transportation issue. So, in this world, with all our adaptive and creative ways of getting things done, there's no reason to exclude anyone. So, they have a mobility appliance. Big deal. Make a wider doorway. Factor these things in when a person is designing a building. Say to yourself, one day, will someone with a disability want to come in here? And if so, how can I be of service to them in what I create? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.